It's Sunday, the 31st of January, 2016. Happy birthday to no one. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Ron120932. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Ron120932, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be that sponsor for the day. Also, moneyball.com.au being a great sponsor all season. And make sure you're checking them out if you live in Australia or New Zealand. They are the best daily fantasy sports site down under. So make sure you're checking them out. Well, the Red Rock jersey review contest is over. And the response has been unbelievable, to be honest. So I'm going to announce the winner on today's show. And the winner is, coincidentally, someone who was obviously created two iTunes accounts, because the sponsor of today's podcast was Ron120932. And coincidentally, the 400th review was Ron120932. So Ron, please get in contact with me and we'll organize for you to receive your prize. I received such an incredible amount of reviews over the last 2 days that, you know, I think I'm going to do this contest again. This is no joke, over the last 2 days, we received in excess of 75 iTunes reviews. So we're closing in on a 500th review. That's how many have come through. So I'm going to extend the contest. If you are review number 500, and I reckon we get to review number 500 before the 500th episode, which is on Friday. If you are review number 500, you will also get an NBA jersey. The amount of reviews that came in was absolutely incredible. I truly appreciate it. I know you guys love the show and you're doing it, you know, also because you wanted a chance to win a jersey. So congratulations to Ron. But with the amount that came in, I could be giving away another jersey in 2 days' time, because the amount that came in, I wouldn't be surprised if I got another 100 coming in the next 24 hours. We will easily get to 500 before the 500th episode. And if you are number 500, you will get that jersey. I said the number has increased every single day. We've got 75 over the last 2 days. We've got 50 plus over the last 24 hours. And another day like that, we will get to 500. So that's how many have come in. It's been ridiculously incredible. So I'm going to extend the contest out to review number 500 as well. So if you didn't win for review 400, which 399 of you didn't, plus more, try again. Go in and leave a review. And if you haven't left a review, this is another chance for you to do it and get involved. And if you're number 500, you will get the another NBA jersey. Ron, let me know. Contact me via email and we can work out our details there. Whew. Let's get into this NBA stuff.
Let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night, which if you are watching on video, you can probably tell who it is. James Harden of the Houston Rockets. Got my Harden jersey on. Might hold it up again for you guys to see. There we go. That's the Houston Rockets jersey I prefer. I hate that red and white one. It needs to have yellow. I don't know what that, yeah. And it clearly doesn't need to be that one they wore in their championship seasons, because that was horrific. This is the best Rockets jersey, the red and yellow. Hey, plenty of you may disagree, but I enjoy the red and yellow on the Rockets jerseys. Jim Harden was fantastic again. He, look, what more can you ask for from a fantasy line? 40 points, 7 rebounds, 11 assists, 4 steals. You throw in 6 three-pointers. He goes 12 of 20 from the field, and he hits all 10 of his free throws, and he turned the ball over just twice. He is now, over the last 2 weeks, the number 2 player. He's the number 1 guy over the last week. In his last 5 games, he's averaging 30, 8.5, 7.5, 3 triples, 1.5 steals, 1 block, 48 and 96. It literally doesn't get any better than what Harden is doing over this last week of action. He is flying at the moment. Yes, his on-court defense leaves a lot to be desired, but he's improved a lot since the start of the season. He was quiet, not so much anymore. We're getting numbers that are, you know, really close to what he did last season. In fact, he is scoring more than last season. He's hitting more threes. He's getting more rebounds, the same assists, the same blocks, and he's slightly down on steals. So he's got a better free throw percentage than last season as well. So basically the difference between him and this year and last year is that you are getting a slightly worse field goal percentage and you're getting less steals. Everything else is better from Harden this season. He has been absolutely incredible. I am pretty happy that I own him in the Red Rock Dynasty League. Just a big shout out to everyone in the Red Rock Dynasty League. I went through today and updated all of the rosters and salaries on our spreadsheet. And a massive shout out goes to Kevin Lappin, who is trading like crazy. I think he's executed about 12 trades this season. Just multiple players going all over the place, definitely positioning himself for the future. He has now acquired 8 first round draft choices for the next 3 seasons. No, sorry, that's not true. 11. 3 this coming season, 5 the season after, and 3 the season after. Really stockpiling some assets, Kevin. So working the dynasty format beautifully. Let's get into the waiver wire line of the night, and that was Jordan Hill of the Indiana Pacers. Jan Mahimi was out. He was a late-minute scratch with a back problem. Hill stepped in as the starter, played 38 minutes. He got a beautiful matchup against the Nuggets. He got an overtime game to boot, and he was fantastic. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 6 blocks. Much like Harden, it's hard to do any better than that. He was a guy that definitely had 12-team value earlier in the season, but with the emergence of Miles Turner, he has dropped off, and his minutes have been way down. I don't think that based on this one game, he's someone to go and add, but if we hear something about Jan Mahimi's back acting up, and Mahimi's had back problems this year, he's had ankle problems this year, so it wouldn't be a shock to see Mahimi miss a couple more games, then Hill is in line for some decent run. Miles Turner is going to be the power forward, it looks like. CJ Miles and that small ball approach has gone away from recent times, or from the start of the season. It's just not happening anymore. So Hill may have some short-term upside. And if you're looking for some numbers, you know, some rebounding, some high field goal percentage, some points, and some field goal percentage, I think I said rebounding percentage, I didn't mean to say that, he can deliver those things. Now, he had 6 blocks today. He's averaging 0.5 on the season, so he's not a massive block guy. He's never averaged over a block a game in his career. But a lot of that's due to the fact that he hasn't really played as a starter for much in his career. He has been like over 1 block per 36 guy throughout his career. But what his strength is rebounding, field goal percentage, and he can add some of those blocks. Not a must-own by any stretch unless we hear that Mahimi is out for the long term, which it doesn't appear that way, but you know, lots of things can happen. For the young gun of the night, we're sticking with the same game, and it's Nikola Jokic again. 35 minutes for Jokic, 16 and 11, a 3, 2 assists, 5 steals. How good is this guy? Seriously, he is so, so good. Mike Malone has been talking this guy up for a very long time. He just needs to play him these sort of minutes moving forward. That would be great. I would really enjoy that. He is a top 20 player over the last 2 weeks in 23 minutes a game, averaging 12.5 and 6.5, half a 3, 2.5 assists, 2.3 steals, 0.8 blocks, 54 and 82. That is such a well-rounded contribution. If Nikola Jokic is not owned in your league, please make sure he is owned. He has to be owned. He is the clear better player between him and Joffrey Lavergne. Now, I still love Jusuf Nurkic, but Nurkic is massively fat at the moment, and he probably won't get into shape, to be honest, before the end of this season. Jokic is, you know, taking things to a completely different level. He needs to play 30 minutes a night. I don't know if Mike Malone will do that. He clearly should, but even in 25 minutes a game, he's an obvious must-own player, Jokic. He's not owned in every league, which is blasphemous. He has to be owned absolutely everywhere. I'm glad I've got him in a couple of leagues. Really, really good player. Can do so much of everything. Love watching Nikola Jokic play. He's just so fun to watch, and he's very... I saw someone make a comparison of him and Marc Gasol on the Basketball Monster Player comments section. I can see that because he can do so much of everything. Defend, pass, score, shoot. Your fundamentals are there. His defense, yeah, maybe needs a little bit of work, but it's not terrible, and he has improved it throughout the season. So Nikola Jokic was the young gun of the night. The dud of the night, we're staying with the same game again, and it's Nikola Jokic's teammate, my boy, Will Barton. 6 points for Will in 17 minutes, 2 rebounds and 1 assist, and this is the problem with Will Barton. I have said it plenty of times this season, he is not very good. And being not very good means there is going to be nights when you don't play very many minutes. He is not good enough to be locked into a 30-minute role. Yes, he's been exceptionally good this season, and now I'm concerned about saying the word good, because in one of the reviews someone said that I say the word good a lot, so I reckon I've dropped it about 15 times already. I'm going to try and avoid using that dreaded G word. He's just not fantastic. He's not awesome. He's not a star player. And when guys get roles who aren't star players and they're fantasy friendly, like Terrence Jones, it's all great. But when their on-court play does suffer at times, their value is going to be very up in the air. It's going to be very variable. And that's exactly what's happening with Barton at the moment. Over the last month, Barton is ranked outside the top 180. Now, he's been a little bit better recently, but his minutes are well down. He's down under 30 minutes now. His last 2 weeks is giving him 25 minutes a game. He's just not a starter level quality player. He's on a bad team, and he's not a starter level quality player on that sort of team. I know a lot of people think that he should be playing over Gary Harris. I do like Harris a lot more than I like Barton. I just don't believe in Barton becoming this superstar player that apparently he looked like he was going to become at the early part of the season. He has regressed a lot. You still hold him. There's no point trading him or anything like that. But if he puts up a big line, I'd be selling high to someone, because there are players in the NBA who have people who are very quick to believe in them. And there are players who in the NBA who have people that are very quick to jump off them. And it's important that you're able to know who these players are. Nick Batum is a player who everyone jumps off as soon as he has a bad streak. This guy's crap. He's useless. Let's drop him. I've had more than one people say, I need to drop Nick Batum. And hey, look, maybe that ends up being right, but But Will Barton puts up a game. Tony Roten puts up a big game. Lance Stevenson puts up a big game. Oh, these guys are ballers. They're awesome. They're fantastic. Must own them. And their value is inflated by, I don't know what it is. I don't know what, hey, maybe it's the flashiness. I think, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's the flashiness that Barton brings, that a guy like Stevenson brings, that a guy like Tony Roten brings to the game, highlight plays and that sort of stuff, that make people quick to overvalue them. So if Barton has a big game, I'd be trying to move on and seeing if I can get a top 50 player back for him, because I just don't think he's going to finish the season as a top 50 guy when he was clearly a top 50 guy to start the season. But I was always skeptical, and if you've heard me talk about it before, you know that I'm not talking shit. I was very skeptical of Will Barton all season, and it's unraveling a little bit. He'll probably recover, and look, he'll still be solid, but I still have a lot of doubt about him as a player. Let's have a look now at the perfect DFS lineup for Saturday's action. There we go. At point guard, the two Philadelphia guys. Now, yesterday I said that we don't want to talk about the Sixers in terms of they're going to be blown out, so it's going to affect DFS, but I thought it's going to be a worry against the Warriors. Regardless of them being the Sixers, even good teams are going to get blown out. Well, the Sixers kept it close until there was a buzzer beater for the Warriors to win the game, a furious comeback, and again, I'll run that poll on Twitter, who is the worst team in the NBA, which I did about 2 weeks ago, and the Sixers unbelievably won that poll as being the worst team in the NBA, which is ludicrous to me. They are clearly nowhere near the worst team in the NBA. All of that talk about the Sixers being a disgrace and the NBA needs to do something about it, you realize they've only been bad for like 2 or 3 years. They were a playoff team like 3 seasons ago. They haven't been, yes, they've been bad and they've been deliberately bad, but it's been for two and a half seasons, and they're actually not bad anymore. They're so entertaining to watch, and they're not the worst team in the NBA. So go and vote on that poll on Twitter. Hey, if you think I'm wrong, vote for the Sixers as the worst team. Pretty sure they're not. Anyway, Ish Smith, 42.5 points against the Warriors. Isaiah Cannon went crazy. He had 33.8, a real big part of their furious comeback down the stretch. And Smith was always a pretty nice option to use. Cannon was a punt in a DFS option, a GPP, that's the word I'm trying to find. He was a punt option there, and it really depends. If he gets 30 minutes and they limit Stauskas, then Cannon's always worth looking at, but he's not really locked into a secure role. The shooting guards, it was a case of riding the hot hand. Monte Ellis, 53.8, doing it again. Really, that I talked about it yesterday. His knee issue that he had drained earlier on in January is clearly freeing him up for some big moments, so he was awesome. And Jimmy Harden at 70.9, I've already detailed how big he was. The small forwards, Bob Cove, 35.1. He's just continually exceeding value at the small forward position. Again, this was a nice matchup for him. He was someone that I looked at using. And Jeffy Green, 37.9. He blows up occasionally. He's on a really red-hot shooting streak. You can continue to use him in tournaments, but his cash game floor is, it's scary. But we've seen his name appear on these perfect lineups, I reckon, 3 times in the last couple of weeks. And that's enough to consider using him in your tournaments. At power forward, Ryan Anderson was massive, even with Anthony Davis returning, 44.7 for Anderson. And Kevin Love under Tyronn Lue is really looking a lot better at the moment. That's another 20-point game scoring-wise for him. He put up 39.7 DFS points, a really good night for Love. And Brook Lopez rounds out the center position, 59.5. He was over 8,000. He did have to take on the Pelicans' front court, which is not much chop. And he put up a big night. And as you can see, the total there, 417.9, was huge. It was a massive night in NBA DFS. Cash lines were way up. I know someone tweeted at me on Moneyball that to cash in the double up, he got like a 319 and wasn't able to cash. But some of it was relatively predictable. Like a lot of those guys, Smith, Ellis, Harden, Covington, they're all guys that I thought were really nice options to have a look at and to use. And, turned out that they ended up being pretty decent options. All right, before we get into these box scores and have a look at them in a little bit more detail, just going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. All right, we are back now, and let's have a look at these games, getting through the box scores in that extra bit of detail. The first game, the early game, the Golden State Warriors and the Philadelphia 76ers have already highlighted a bit of what happened in that one. There was no Andre Iguodala. He was out for rest, and Festus Ezeli was still bothering. He's still having that knee issue bother him. So Andrew Bogut only played 20 minutes, but at the moment, Bogut doesn't need big minutes to put up decent fantasy lines. 20 minutes, 8 points, but 16 boards, 4 assists, and 2 blocks. He can be used in 12-team leagues. It's not comfortable using him. It's not fantastic, but that sort of number is a clear 12-team league line. Now, 16 rebounds is an ongoing thing. It is not replicable, but he's ranked inside the top 100 on the season. He's ranked 105th over the last 2 weeks. He's basically doing it all in 20 minutes. It's because he's shooting a massive field goal percentage. He's getting good rebounds, solid assists, and good block numbers. You're getting... And it all structures around how you want to build your team. And even his free throws, which he's shooting 41% on the season, it's at 0.7 attempts a game. The impact that has is negligible. It's almost a similar impact to someone who's shooting, say, 72% on 5 attempts. I'd have to look it up exactly. But he's got a Z-score of negative 0.5 on 41%. So I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to look at Andrew Wiggins' negative Z-score in his free throws. All right, Andrew Wiggins is shooting 74% for the season, and his Z-score is negative 0.4. Bogut's is negative 0.5. 74% for Wiggins, 41% for Bogut. That's how little impact Bogut's poor shooting is having. So looking at free throw percentage alone does not tell you what that does for your free throw percentage category. If you were to say that Andrew Wiggins and Andrew Bogut are the same impact on your free throw percentage for your team, you'd get laughed out of most leagues. But it's true. It's because Wiggins takes 7 attempts a game and Bogut takes 0.7. So, his free throws are bad. He's not a punt free throw guy, though, because if he's a punt free throw guy, Wiggins is a punt free throw guy. And no, that's not how it works. Steph Curry was good, 23-5-6, 5 triples, there's that word good again, 1 steal and 2 blocks, a really nice performance across the line. And Draymond Green almost triple-double, 10-13-9, 2 steals and a block, while Clay, after scoring 45 points the game before, dropped another 32, including 4 triples, and had 3 assists. So the big guys with the big numbers. Harry Barnes with not a bad night. Not a great shooting night from Barnes. 4 of 11. 11 and 6. 2 steals and 3 triples is fairly handy, though. He is still not a must-own lock onto my roster. Active, non-bench player for me. He's a last guy on my bench, second last guy on my bench sort of player that, his upside is probably top 90. His upside is very limited unless some of these guys get hurt. And he just, I don't know, most of the time I'd probably rather a streaming spot than have Harrison Barnes. He can be owned, there's no problem with it, but he's just very, sort of average. And that can be fine in certain situations. Not much love from any of the bench guys there for the Warriors. Speaking of bench guys and love, on the Sixers, Isaiah Cannon did come off the bench. He played 30 minutes, 18-4-2, 5 triples, 4 steals, played the 30 minutes whilst Nick Stauskas played just 22. It's an extra run for Cannon. He's a top 75 player over the last 2 weeks, and it comes on the back of his excellent free throw percentage, which is at 93% in that time, 2.5 triples and 1.3 steals. Don't expect much more than that. He's definitely not someone I'm rushing out to go and grab. If I knew he was playing 30 minutes a night, which he currently isn't, then I'd be more interested. But they're going to run Stauskas. They're going to run Hollis Thompson out there. you're going to have TJ McConnell getting minutes, and he played another 21 here, McConnell, and went 6-4-4 with 3 steals. TJ McConnell actually leads all rookies in assists this season, which I think is something that some people might be a little bit surprised about, but he's a guy that you can stream in for assists. So Cannon's not a must-own sort of player. Bob Cove is, though. He played 36 minutes, 12 and 13, 2 threes, 2 steals, 1 block. Remember that slump he was going through, and he was absolutely terrible? I dropped him in a 10-team league. I think I held him in my 12-team leagues. But obviously, you have to re-own him now because he's back in business. And Ish Smith, another good night. Another poor shooting night, but a good night nonetheless. 16-5-9 with 4 steals, going 7 of 19 from the field, and hit 2 of his 4 free throws. Speaking of Stauskas, he had 10 points in 22 minutes. He's not a fantasy guy except for deep leaguers. And Jahlil Okafor was back. He played 21 minutes off the bench. They kept Jeremy Grant in the starting lineup. But what this highlights is that Grant has no place really in a 12-team league when Okafor and Noel are playing. Grant only 20 minutes, 10-1-3 with a steal and a block, which is not terrible, but you're not going to get consistent production out of him from 20 minutes. And Okafor will play more than 21 minutes on most nights as well. So Grant is great if Noel or Okafor is out and he has to start and play 30 minutes. As a bench backup, it's not happening. Nerlens Noel, 9-8, not his greatest night, really not a good percentage night for him, but 2 steals and a block, still getting it done defensively. And Hollis Thompson had 11 points with a triple one as well in 25 minutes, and he's a really solid sort of 14-team league guy, Hollis, not someone who I'm using to build the future around in any dynasty leagues or anything like that. Detroit and the Raptors. One day after going on a Brandon Jennings shouldn't be owned in standard leagues rant, Brandon Jennings scores 22 points in 22 minutes, including 5 triples, 4 rebounds, 2 steals and a block, to make me look like an absolute dickhead. But I stand by it. He, in his previous 4 games, Brandon Jennings... Look, okay, so Brandon Jennings scored 20 points. When was it? He scored it on the... I've got my notes here. Okay, so Brandon Jennings scored 20 points on January the 21st. In the next 4 games, he totaled 7 points. So 7 points in 4 games. And now he's gone out and put up another big 20-point game. He got extra run here because he got red hot and he led the Pistons back in a comeback run, and Van Gundy went with the guys who had brought him there. Which, you know, I disagree with that at times, but that's what happened with him. He got hot and they kept him in extra minutes and he shot well. He's ranked outside the top 260 on the season. He's not still someone I'm owning. I'm not picking him up. I'm not going, hey, Josh, you're wrong. Yeah, he's going to be a standard league guy. This will happen occasionally, definitely, but the intervening crapness is not worth holding on to. Yes, a big game, great. I actually love Brandon Jennings. I think he's a really good player. It's just the situation I hate, and I just don't think his fantasy value is going to be something that's all that exciting this season. But congratulations to him today. Big, big night, but look, he'll probably go back to 2 points in 17 minutes in the next one. Aaron Baines had a good night, 11-7 with a steal and 2 blocks in 20 minutes, while Andre Drummond, only 28 minutes. He got hacked to oblivion, 11-12 with 2 blocks. 1 of 9 from the free throw line. I think he missed his first 6 attempts. That's a really, really, obviously a really, really bad performance from Drummond from the line. So that gave Baines those extra minutes. And that's why Baines becomes a very interesting DFS play on nights where you think that the team might go the hacker strategy and it's going to limit Drummond. Baines is going to get 20 minutes. And whenever he gets minutes, there is production from Aaron Baines. That's just what he does. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 15-5-1, 2 steals, a 3-pointer. Very good night from him. He has turned into quite a consistent player. And Marcus Morris, 13-3-2, 2 steals, a block, and a triple. So one of Marcus Morris's best nights recently as well. Stan Johnson couldn't get back to 30 minutes, but he still looked pretty good. 12-4 in 28 with a steal. He is a stash for a 12-team league guy. If you're in a comfortable position and you're hoping you can get a top 100 guy, and in a 14-team league, I'm definitely adding Stan Johnson. Reggie Jackson, not his greatest night, 13 points in 28 minutes. And Anthony Tolliver played 35 minutes with Ersan Ilyasova out, 5 points with 2 rebounds. Probably wouldn't have wanted Tolliver to play that many minutes. I would have preferred Van Gundy play Marcus Morris at the 4 and put Stanley Johnson and given him 35 minutes, and Tolliver could have played 25 or so off the bench. Hey, it didn't work out having Tolliver play that many minutes, so maybe if Ilyasova has to miss any more time, they do run with Johnson there a little bit more. Onto the Raptors, DeMar DeRozan, 29-3-4, 2 steals, 9 of 10 from the free throw line. This is basically just who DeMar DeRozan is these days. And Kyle Lowry went 18-8 and had 3 steals in 40 minutes. Not the greatest shooting night from Lowry, 4 of 15 from the field and 9 of 12 from the free throw line, but you can forgive him. The Terrence Ross run of being valuable is done for the time being anyway. He only played 22 minutes here for 5 points. He was getting 30 minutes and producing really well about a week or so ago. He can be moved on from. James Johnson played 21 minutes and had a very nice sort of James Johnson-y line, 11 and 7 with 2 steals on 4 of 5 shooting. He's not someone that is worth looking at in anything outside of like a 16-team league. Yes, he can get bulk steals and bulk blocks, but he's just not getting enough playing time for that to be a real issue. Bismack Biyombo had a good game off the bench. 21 minutes, 12 and 13 with 3 blocks, while Jonas Valanciunas only 27 minutes, 8 and 9. Not his greatest night. Still Dwayne Casey continues to not unleash Valanciunas, and it's just one thing that just bubbles in me all the time. Just play Valanciunas 32 minutes. Yeah, Bismack Biyombo, yes, he scored 12 points, but he is offensively inept. With Terrence Ross reduced, Corey Joseph got 28 minutes, 16, 2 and 4, but he's a little bit too unreliable, I think, for 12-team formats. And melange of crapness at power forward. Luis Scola played 23 minutes for 10 points, and Patrick Patterson had 2 points in his 25 minutes. Neither of those guys are 12-team guys. The Denver Nuggets and the Indiana Pacers. Gary Harris bounced back from a terrible game to post 18 points. He had 3 assists, 2 threes, 1 steal, 1 block. You know I like Gary Harris. You know I think he's a 12-team league guy. Ken Fareed, 16 and 12 in 35 minutes. So if you own him, you're really happy to see him get 35 minutes. He went 16 and 12, and he has a lot of value for his rebounding prowess and his field goal percentage if he's able to get these minutes. But if he's playing those mid-20 minutes, it really reduces him to a borderline ownable guy. He's still ownable now. Not suggesting that we drop him or anything like that, but this worked out well for him in the overtime period. He's just ranked marginally inside the top 100 this season, and that's probably about where he should be, I think, you know, for the rest of the year. Danilo Gallinari led the team in scoring again, 23 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, a nice night from him. And Emmanuel Mudiay, 37 minutes. His standard poor shooting, 4 of 10 and 3 of 5 from the line, 11, 5 and 8, so some decent counting stats. This is exactly who he is. Jimmy Nelson only got the 16 minutes and had 3 assists and 3 rebounds in that time, so it's not like Nelson's taking that time away from Mudiay. Yusuf Nurkic got 17 minutes, and we didn't see any Joffrey Lavergne. Nurkic, 7 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. He had a steal and 2 blocks. So a really good night from Nurkic, but in order for him to take the minutes off Jokic, it's going to take a big effort because Jokic is playing out of his mind. Onto the Pacers, and speaking about playing out of your mind, Monte Ellis, 32, 9 and 6, 4 triples, 3 steals. Just huge, huge, huge. I'd be really looking into selling high on Monte Ellis if I could. But when I say sell high, you need to go high, like really, really high, because there's no point, you know, selling Monte Ellis for a guy who's ranked 50th, because Monte Ellis might finish anywhere between 40th and 70th. I was saying if someone looks at him and go, oh, Monte Ellis is awesome, let's send a top 30 player back for him. Because I remember when Monte Ellis used to be a top 25 guy 3 years ago. That's selling high. Selling high is not getting an extra 10 spots in rankings value because, as I say millions of times, guys ranked between 50 and 90 are basically the same. Their value doesn't differ all that much. You need to be going two tiers above to be really selling high. So that's why I'm not a massive sell high fan unless you're just legitimately selling at a ridiculously high rate. Paul George, 19, 3 and 7 with 3 triples in 39 minutes, and George Hill played 45 and was not productive. 3 of 10 for George Hill, 9, 3 and 4 with a steal. And a 3-pointer. Not horrible, but not fantastic. Miles Turner's shooting percentages were horrible. He went 3 of 11 from the field, 2 of 5 from the free throw line, and his thumb was definitely bothering him, so maybe that played a part in that. Still had 4 blocks, 8 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 assists, and looked pretty good in doing so. So I don't think we've got too much to be concerned about, hopefully, about his production or his role moving forward. Lavoy Allen, only 16 minutes in a bench role, and CJ Miles, 14 minutes. CJ Miles can be moved on from in basically all standard leagues. Given his role. Also some news on Rod Stuckey. He won't be back until after the All-Star break. So Joe Young is going to continue to play some minutes. 13 for Young, 7 points with 3 rebounds, but he is still a dynasty and a deep league guy only. The Brooklyn Nets and the New Orleans Pelicans. Brookie Lopez, 33 and 10 in 37 minutes, 3 steals, 4 blocks. Surprisingly, only 7 of 12 from the free throw line, but Lopez has been incredibly good this season on an incredibly bad Nets team. Thad Young went 16, 8, and 4 in his 34 minutes, a really nice night from him, and Joe Johnson, 10, 7, and 5, probably should be owned in most of your leagues. The point guard situation is as odd as ever. In the last game, it was 35 minutes to Sloan, 17 to Larkin. In this one, Sloane played 22, Larkin played 26, and Larkin was clearly the better player. 13-3-6 for Larkin, Sloane 2-3-3. Now, unless I see Larkin do this two or three games in a row, then I wouldn't be going and adding him. Much like if I own Sloane, I'm okay with holding him, but the minutes are going to be just split most of the time, and neither of them feel like they're going to be a lock for 12-team value. So if there's someone out there that you want, if there's Nikola Jokic out there, if there's Miles Turner out there, if there's even, say, Zach LaVine out there, and you have to drop Donald Sloane to do it, do it. Sloane is not that good, and Larkin is not someone I'm rushing to go and grab. I'm also not rushing to grab Wayne Ellington, who played 33 minutes, had 18 points and 5 triples. I talked about him as a nice DFS punt option yesterday. It worked out pretty well. But if his threes don't fall, then it's just not happening for him. In his last 2 weeks, he's played 28 minutes a game, 9 points, 1.7 threes, and it puts him ranked 170th. His shooting percentage is way down. All he offers you is 3. So he's a nice streamer for a 3, especially while he's getting minutes, but that's really about it from him. Not much more to get too excited, but he's definitely taking Bojan Bogdanovic's role, who played just 20 minutes and had 3 points. So he's got that going for him, and that's really deeper leagues only. Thomas Robinson, 8-8 with a steal and a block in 15 minutes as well. Onto the Pelicans, Ryan Anderson only played 26 minutes. 24-6-5, 5 triples, 2 steals and a block. A very, very well-rounded line from Ryan Anderson. He is another guy that I would be considering selling high on. He's not someone I think is an awesome fantasy player. Look, he's been awesome the last bit. He's a top 10 guy over the last week, averaging 27-8-3 with 4 triples, but that's just not who he is. I think that he's someone who I'd be looking to... If someone believes he's going to be a top 20 player, then you have to sell him. I'm not sure many people do, but he is also a guy that people tend to overvalue or tend to jump back on the bandwagon with pretty quickly. He's not someone who I can see really maintaining this exact level of production for the rest of the season. He's just, I don't know, look, especially not what he's doing recently anyway, unless Anthony Davis goes out long term, which I know many of you think is almost a lock to happen. Drew Holiday played 24 minutes. He's really good. 26 points, 7 assists, 3 triples, 10 of 19 shooting, awesome stuff. And Anthony Davis was back. He played 40 minutes, 20-16, 1-3, 3 assists, 2 blocks, tremendous DFS value, again, which I'm sure many people faded him in DFS, and he would have had nice value there. Omer Asik is starting to put together some decent games, much to my amazement. 6 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 blocks. He is not a shot blocker, though. He is averaging this season 0.5 blocks a game. He averaged last season 0.7 blocks. He averaged the season before 0.8 blocks. His last 3 games, he's averaging 2.3 blocks. Do not get fooled thinking Omer Asik is this great rim protector, shot blocker guy. He's just, that's not who he is. None of his career numbers have ever really shown that he is a rim protector, shot blocker sort of. He's a decent defender. He's slow as anything, but he's not a shot blocker. So much of his value is coming from these increased rebounds and the increased shot blocking. And yes, he is a good rebounder. And yes, if he plays 30 minutes, you're going to get 20 rebound games out of Omer Asik. You're also going to get subpar free throws and about 4 points a game, which he's actually averaging 3.6 this season. The blocks are a little bit misleading. I just don't think that's going to be something that's happening. But if you're looking for some looking for some rebounding and a relatively high field goal percentage on low attempts, not the worst guy to add in, say, a 14-team league. Talked about Bryce DeJean Jones yesterday. Another start for him. 36 more minutes, 8 points, 9 rebounds, a 3 and a steal. He is definitely someone that 14-team leaguers will want to look at. And seriously, some 12-team league people are going to have to pay attention to him in the short term if you've got some garbage to get rid of, because he might be a top 75 player for a couple of weeks, and that can be useful. Alonzo G, big minutes for him again, 39, 4-2-2. He is not useful. He had some solid DFS games recently, but in a standard league format, I'm not getting overly excited there. And speaking of not overly excited, Norris Cole, 12-2-5. On 6 of 14 shooting. This is basically what Norris Cole is. You look at it and go, yeah, 12-2-5 is not bad, but from a fantasy point of view, it's also not good. Like, he's just, this is what Norris Cole is. Okay, so we look at his last 2 weeks, which have been 7 games. He's averaging 31 minutes a game. 11.3 points, a 3, 4.5, 5, half a steal. But do you know where it puts him in ranking terms? 225th. In the last week, he's averaging 34 minutes a game. He's ranked 260th. He is legitimately in the top 5 worst players in the NBA. Yes, the minutes are there. Yes, he's doing certain things for certain teams. Like the 6.3 assists he's got over his last three games are actually pretty useful. But there is only positive contribution across that time. He hasn't hit a free throw in the last three games. He shot 41% on 15 attempts, which is very hurtful. He gets no steals, no blocks. He's hit a three. His scoring is less than average. He probably should be owned in 12-team leagues, but he also probably shouldn't be owned on my team. He's just not a very good player. And the 30 minutes looks appealing and 12, 2 and 5, yeah, it's all right. But overall, he does hurt you. And it has to be very sort of measured as to how you have him on your team. And I know that plenty of people have owned him, but he's just bad. Just bad. Dante Cunningham played 5 minutes, and that's probably about where he should be. And Tony Douglas, only the 15 minutes, 3 points with Bryce. DeJuan Jones has definitely jumped ahead of him in terms of his fantasy value and in terms of his spot in the rotation. The Sacramento Kings and the Memphis Grizzlies. DeMarcus Cousins looks great. 17 and 14, 3 steals, 2 blocks, 1 3. That looks great. 3 of 17 from the field is decidedly horrible. 10 of 14 from the free throw line is also not good. 6 turnovers is also not good. But all that pales into insignificance when we think about the fact that Marc Gasol rolled up on his ankle and it looked horrible. Now, the good news. He's only day-to-day. X-rays are negative. It's not a severe issue. He's day-to-day. Now, he's going to miss a game. He might miss 2 games. But it's not the end of the world. Thank goodness. Obviously, Willie Cauley-Stein should be owned, and he should have been owned anyway, despite the way that he's been reduced in the last couple of outings. But I'm not making any drastic move to go and add Kostas Koufos if it's only a day-to-day issue. And Omri Caspi is the other guy who definitely has some interest. Now, if Cousins has to miss 1 or 2 games, as they'll go small and they'll play Caspi a little bit more. So some crisis averted there for Cousins and some short-term value for Caspi, and Cauley-Stein should be owned regardless. On to the rest of the Kings. Rudy Gay, 21-7 with 2 triples, a steal and a block. He was back and doing exactly what he needs to do. Rajon Rondo did not keep his 10 assist game streak going. That sounds bad, but I think you know what I mean. 15-6-8 with 2 steals, and he fouled out. And that put Darren Collison into the game, and Collison got hot as well. 20 points with a 3, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. Always remember, if Rajon Rondo is out, Darren Collison is a top 50 player. Just remember that. So that's part of the reason why you still want to hold him. Yes, his production's up and down, but I still recommend owning him in 12-team leagues. Omri Caspi was good, 17-7 with 2 triples in 27 minutes. And Ben McLemore got 26 minutes, but didn't do a huge amount. So he's obviously still not a standard league target. Cauley-Stein, only the 16 minutes here, 2-5 with a steal. So his last 2 games have definitely been subpar, but I am still holding on to him. On the Grizzlies, huge game from Marc Gasol, 22-6-5, 2 steals, 5 blocks, all 8 of his free throws, 7 of 14 from the field. He is turning in a very, very strong run at the moment. And his teammate Jeff Green is also in a really red hot streak. 29 points for Green. He hit 3 triples, he had 3 steals, he went 11 of 16 from the field. But Jeff Green is notoriously streaky. He is literally a top 10 player over the last week, Green, because he's shooting 63%, 26.7 points, 2.7 triples. He's ranked 164th on the season. He's worth grabbing, definitely worth grabbing in a 12-team league, but seriously, I could be sitting here next week and saying, just piss him off, because he's done. But he's on fire at the moment. He's shooting 20% higher than his season average. You know it's going to come down, and that's going to take his scoring down, it's going to take his confidence down, his threes are going to drop, and then he doesn't do enough in the other categories to sustain value. So by all means, grab Jeff Green, see how long this lasts, but by All-Star break, it's probably over. Courtney Lee had a hot game as well, 18 points with 3 triples and 2 steals, but that's peak Courtney Lee. I don't think you're getting much more than that out of him. And Matt Barnes was reduced to only 22 minutes. He went scoreless. He had 2 steals and 2 blocks, but he's not a guy to own in 12-team leagues anymore, nor is Tony Allen, who went 12-5 with a couple of steals. I'd even put Zebo in that category as well. 10-5 for Zebo in 25 minutes. He had a steal. The minutes are not there. Jeff Green's getting that extra run. They're running Courtney Lee, Allen, and Barnes into that role as well. It's just not happening for Randolph. I dropped Randolph in a 12-team league yesterday, I think, or the day before to grab, it's actually a dynasty league. I think I dropped him and I grabbed Julius Randle in his place. Even though they offered me the same thing, Randle is on the way up, Randolph is on the way down. Mike Conley, not his best night, 8 points. Still had 4 rebounds and 7 assists with a steal, but not a great night from Mike Conley. Still a really good buy low opportunity, I think, on Mike Conley now with a couple of sort of quieter games recently. The Washington Wizards and the Houston Rockets, Marcin Gortat, 13 and 11 with a steal and 2 blocks. Hit all 4 of his field goal attempts. Inexplicably not played enough. I don't know why. He's only getting 27 minutes. Maybe because the Rockets were going quite small and then Dwight Howard got ejected again, so they went even smaller. But still, just play your best players. Whitman, make Houston react to you. Make Houston react to Gortat because he's in there and he can do a lot. Anyway, the Wizards made a lineup change, which I can only assume is to do with what the Rockets did with their lineup. They put Dudley in as the starting power forward over Nene. Dudley played 37 minutes and went 16-5-4 with 2 threes and a steal. But I get the feeling that Nene might start the next one and Dudley will go back to 27 minutes. I think that the fact that he played 37 minutes was because of the opposition lineup. I really hate reacting to opposition lineups. I hate it. Just if you think you're good, put your guys out there and let them go and do it and make the opposition have to adjust to you as well. Well, you know what? You can defer to what the opposition does during the game, but don't start off one step on the back foot. That just bothers me. Hey, the Wizards got the win, so what do I know? John Wall, 19, 8, and 13. A steal, 2 blocks, and a 3. Really terrible shooting, 7 of 22 for him. And interesting trade went down to the Red Rock Listener League yesterday, the Stacey Augman division, which I'm a part of. Matt Smith made a trade with, wish I could remember, but I'm not going to butcher it by saying the wrong person. Anyway, Matt Smith made a trade. Matt traded away Kyrie Irving and Giannis Antetokounmpo to get John Wall. Interesting to hear your thoughts on that. I didn't think I was a massive fan of it, but Matt's thing was, look, I need to make a roll of the dice to get into the playoffs, and I've got to try and get Wall's production now rather than rely upon Irving turning it up in 2 or 3 weeks, which is fair enough reasoning. So that's the sort of trades that went down in the Listener League yesterday. Ramon Sessions had a decent game, 17 and 3 with 2 triples. He's only a deeper league guy. And Nene back to 19 minutes, 10, 2 and 2. Now, I've said plenty of times, own Nene, wait till the wheels fall off. You can own him in deeper 12 team leagues, definitely. I don't think this is a sign necessarily of the wheels falling off because I reckon it's a bit matchup based. So I think he might go and play 26 minutes in the next game and put up decent numbers. So if I added Nene, yeah, I'd be okay to drop him if there's someone great out there, but if I'm just dropping him for the sake of dropping him, I want to see what happens in the next one. Good news for Brad Beal owners, he played 30 minutes. 11, 3, and 4 is not great news, but the fact that he played 30 minutes is also pretty good. And Garrett Temple got 34 minutes, 11, 4, and 4 for him, and that's because Otto Porter lasted just 12 minutes before succumbing to that hip issue once again. Oddly enough, Kelly Oubre played 6 seconds with Porter out. Temple got most of the run there with Neal and Sessions getting extra minutes. If Porter happens to miss time, which you think is going to happen, then Oubre is not someone to own. Temple would be interesting, but Neal, Sessions, they'll all start splitting the time, and Dudley as well. But if I'm adding anyone, it is probably Dudley because he's going to play 3 and 4, and you might be able to get some value in that way. But no clear winner if Porter has to miss any more time, which I would imagine that he does, because this hip has been an ongoing issue for him throughout his career. On to the Rockets, Pat Beverley, 15, 3, and 5, 2 steals and 3 threes, 35 minutes. There is no one taking the point guard job away from him. He is he's a nice fantasy guy, assuming you understand his limitations and what he does on your team. He fits certain teams better than others, but he's putting up some pretty impressive numbers as of late, and should be looked at. Trevor Ariza really in a strong run of form here at power forward. 36 minutes, 17 and 7, 3 triples and a steal. A nice night there. And Dwight Howard, before his ejection, 20 and 7 in 29 minutes. And just quietly, Dwight Howard is such a massive knob. I can't stand him. Who gets ejected twice in 2 games for arguing? Just shut your pie hole. No one wants to hear from you, Dwight. No, nobody, literally nobody wants to hear from you. Nobody wants to hear from you on the court. Nobody wants to hear from you in an interview. Just shut up. Get yourself ejected twice in 2 games. That's real team play there, and you lost the game. If I had a dickhead of the night award, Howard's going to get it pretty much most of the time. Just as unlikable a character as I've ever seen in the sporting environment. Just a massive, massive knob. Anyway, Terrence Jones, 6 minutes. He's done. He's cooked. If you believe he's going to get traded, and he's going to get traded to a team that is going to say, we love Terrence Jones and we're going to start him, hold on to him. But which team is that? He is just not an NBA quality starter. And I know a lot of people drafted him. I drafted him at the start of the season, and some people drafted him based on the Basketball Monster projections. The projections, I'm going to say it's stupid saying this, but the projections were fine. The projections were based on the fact that he's going to play 30 minutes a game. Who is going to play minutes ahead of him? Donatas Motiejunas, who has a back issue, we have no idea when he is going to start playing. No. Clint Capela, who at the start of the season was strictly viewed as a developmental center-only project. We had no idea he would take minutes away from Terrence Jones. Josh Smith was a member of the Clippers. Sam Decker's out for the season with a back injury. And Montrezl Harrell is an undersized, underdeveloped second-round rookie. We had Terrence Jones ranked highly because who was going to get the minutes? I said multiple times throughout the offseason, I do not like Terrence Jones as a player, but I have to admit that when he plays, he's going to put up fantasy numbers. The problem is, he was not good enough. He's not good enough to maintain minutes when there's someone around. And the Rockets are always looking to upgrade that position because he's just not, you know, a viable NBA player. And that's exactly what's happened this season. If he was going to get 30 minutes unencumbered, the fantasy numbers come for him. Doesn't mean he's a good player, though. And that's always what you need to look at. That's the same thought process I have on Tony Roden. He'll play 30 minutes and the fantasy numbers are going to just pour out of his ass like nobody's business. But he's such a bad player that as soon as somebody shows any flash of taking those minutes away from him, he's gone. And Roden got the ass. That's the difference between look at his numbers and, well, why did he get the numbers? And the same thing happened with Jones. I just didn't see all this confluence of events happening. Capela becoming a power forward. Josh Smith coming back. You know, didn't expect all that sort of stuff to happen for them to go Trevor Ariza at the four, which is not something they've ever really done before. So that's, you know, that's part of the reason why he was projected so high. But now, piss him off. He's done. He's not. Who's going to trade for him and go, we are starting him and playing him 30 minutes? The Sixers aren't. The Lakers aren't. I'm talking about bad teams here. The Nets aren't. Look who they've got ahead. Randall for the Lakers. Thad Young for the Nets. Nerlens Noel for the Sixers. The Suns, maybe. Maybe he starts for the Suns. But Alex Len's a better player than him. Markieff Morris is a way better player than Terrence Jones. Obviously, there's different issues there with Markieff. He's just not a good player. End of Terrence Jones rant. Corey Brewer played 30 minutes. 5 points with a three and a block. He's a deep league guy only. And Josh Smith failed to crack 20 minutes for the second game in a row. 9-4-3 in 17 minutes. Probably not. Look, you can own him in certain standard league formats, but look, it looked like we were going to be, yeah, yes, he's got to be owned if you're punting percentages, all that sort of stuff. But now that's not really the case. He's settling into this 17-minute, 20-minute role, and it's probably not going to be enough to own him long-term. It was worth a flyer, but it's probably not going to be flying for too much longer. The last game of the night, the San Antonio Spurs got their asses kicked by the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kawhi had 24-6 with 3 triples and 2 assists in 35 minutes. And the rest of the team, again, spread the minutes out, Pop. That's exactly what he did. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge, 15-2 in 26 minutes. Tony Parker, 13-4-6 in 24. You know, decent showing from Kyle Anderson, who went 10-3-3 with a steal and a block. John Simmons had 8 points in 18 minutes. But nothing of this is actionable. Danny Green was putrid, 5-3 in 23 minutes. He's worth holding in a roto league, Danny Green, but in a head-to-head league, it's too much trouble for me at the moment. There is nothing, you know, all that interesting here. Manu Ginobili has dropped off significantly the last week or so. In a 12-team league, I reckon you can move on from him as well. Now, he was definitely putting up 12-team league value. It's just not happening for him at the moment. David West replacing Tim Duncan didn't do anything. You know, there's just nothing exciting happening from this team from a fantasy point of view, despite how good they are, and you know, they've lost the last couple of games. Obviously, they just spread these minutes out so much that it's hard to really get too excited about the prospects of many of them. On the Cavs, the big three scored 20 plus points again. I'm sure if Jeff Van Gundy's listening, he'll hate me referring to them as the big three, so I apologize, Jeff. I know you're a big fan. 34 minutes for LeBron, 29-5-7 with 2 steals and 2 blocks on stellar percentages. Kevin Love, 21-11 with 3 points. No, 3 triples, that's the one. And Kyrie Irving, 21-1-5 with 2 steals in 36 minutes. Tristan Thompson, only 7 rebounds, so that hurts his value when he gets so little there. And J.R. Smith, 10 points, including 2 triples. I'm still owning J.R. in a 12-team league, but he played less than Iman Shumpert in this one, and that will happen from time to time. Another nice night from Matthew Dellavedova. He played 24 minutes. 15-5, 3 assists, 3 triples. He's not a 12-team league must-own player, but he's not out of place on a 12-team league roster. He's averaging 5 assists a game this season. His last four games is giving you 2.3 triples to go with that. Four rebounds, half a steal. These aren't bad numbers. He's shooting 90% from the free throw line over the course of the season. Yes, it's on 0.9 attempts, but he's not hurting you there. He's adding a little bit to you. In a 14-team league, he has to be owned. In a 12-team league, he's a really great streaming option if you want to give yourself a chance to get three or four assists and a couple of triples. He's a great option there. Don't be dissuaded by how unaesthetic his game is. He's really taken it to a complete another level this season. And that's obviously pretty exciting to see from an Aussie point of view anyway. All right, going to take a quick break now, and then we'll be back in a couple of minutes to do a preview of Sunday's DFS action. We're back. There is almost a full slate of NBA games. Well, a full DFS-based slate anyway. Seven games on Sunday because we've got no NFL happening unless you count the Pro Bowl. Does the Pro Bowl still happen this week? Yeah, I'm sure it does. I'm so out of touch with the NFL at the moment. Anyway, seven games. Beautiful number for DFS. Now, there are early games, so you've got to check your tournaments to see which games are actually included in the contests. There are early ones, so some of them will be excluded, obviously. The first one of these games is the Chicago Bulls and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 5.5. The total is 204.5 points. Etwan Moore will be starting again. He played 36 minutes in the last game. And Kirk Heinrich is questionable, and Jimmy Butler is considered probable after dealing with an ankle issue in practice. He's going to be fine to go. On the Clippers side of things, Paul Pierce, he should play. He missed the last game due to rest. Now, value-wise, Bob Portis, 3,500. It's appealing, definitely, but his minutes, they're just not likely to be there. He played 22 in the last one and put up 18 points. And you know what? 18 points at 3,500 is not bad in terms of, you know, value-wise. It's basically 5x. It is 5x. Do you roster him? I think he's an okay tournament guy. He's not a bad cash game guy if you're going to surround him with a lot of other high-priced players, because you should be able to get 18 points out of him. But I'm not expecting too much. I'm not expecting 30 minutes. There was someone on the Basketball Monster forums today that was talking about Nikola Mirotic. Who is going to replace Nikola Mirotic? Taj Gibson and Bobby Portis are still available on my waiver wire. That's a no-brainer. It's going to be Gibson. You know, Portis, for as many flashes as he's seen, he falls into that category of guys that I talked about before, that as soon as they do something good, every person jumps on them. Oh, this guy's the best. He's the best. He's the best. He's a Tony Roten, Will Barton category sort of player. But he's had a lot of struggles recently. He can put up numbers, definitely, but it's going to limit his playing time as he gets used to playing in the NBA, because the guy's a rookie. He's only like 20 years old. He's still got a lot to learn, and the Bulls aren't pressed into a spot where they have to use him big minutes. They're not down to him using him as a starter. He's still a backup. They'll just run 35 minutes for Gibson, 35 for Gasol, and play him his bench numbers. Yeah, play McDermott at the four. Play some Felizia. Play some Besto. He doesn't have to run big minutes. It's way too much talking on Bobby Portis. He's worth a flyer at 3,500. Pau Gasol at 8,900. I do like him. He's been super consistent recently, averaging over 46 in his last three games. Almost 9,000 is a lot, obviously, but you know, he's still a pretty decent value player. 4,800 for JJ Redick. The matchup is beautiful for him. His production has been less than beautiful. Hasn't been doing much of anything. Probably look at him as more of a tournament option, but we know he can get hot. We know there can be 30 points coming his way relatively easily. Cole Aldrich at 3,700. The projections like him. The matchup is easy, but I'm just not sure about the minutes. I'm not sure. I'd throw him into a tournament. That's probably about where I'd stick with him. Taj Gibson's at 5,000. I like him in this one. He put up 30 in the last game. I think his minutes will be pretty big. I reckon he is definitely worth a look. And DeAndre Jordan at 7,800 is also a pretty solid guy to have a look at. Again, the matchup is pretty nice going up against the Bulls. 40 points shouldn't seem too far out of the realms of possibility. Chris Paul, 9,900. Really, really positive matchup. But at 10,000, well, basically 10,000, he needs to get to 50 points. I'm not really sure that he can do it here. He's averaging 39 across the last three and pretty consistent around that 40 mark. I think you want more out of $10,000 worth. You've got Jimmy Butler, who's at 9,000, and he's averaging just less than 2 points less than Paul over the last three games. And that might be a better option. Now, the defensive DVP ease ranking against Butler is not as positive, and Butler is dealing with an ankle, so I'm not overly confident in using Jim here, but he's not, I'm sort of referencing it to Chris Paul. They're both, do I expect Paul to get 50 or Jimmy Butler to get 45? I reckon Butler getting 45 feels a better option. Derrick Rose at 5,900, the matchup does not suit him at all. He's been playing a lot better, and he's under 6,000, which is always a number where I said if he's under 6,000, he definitely comes into play. He probably doesn't come into play as much here going up against Chris Paul, though, to be honest. Etwan Moore is a starter at minimum salary. He's definitely worth having a look at in a tournament anyway. He put up 17 in his last start. He can get better than that. He can hit some threes. He can get some steals. He's a minimum salary player. He's not someone to be shied away from in tournaments anyway. Definitely not looking at him in cash games. Lance Stephenson, Austin Rivers, they both blew up in the last game against the Lakers. The Bulls are not the same level of competition as the Lakers, so I'm really not expecting them to do anywhere near the same as what they did in that last game. The Atlanta Hawks and the Miami Heat, there is no spread for this one because we are unsure of the status of a couple of players. Paul Millsap is probable with an ankle sprain, and Hassan Whiteside is questionable with that ab oblique issue. I would say that, at the moment, the Heat have got their probable starters outlined, and Whiteside is not on that list. So, if you're looking at it, I would say that Whiteside probably doesn't play. Doesn't mean that we want to necessarily go and run Amari Stoudemire out there, but he's at 3,900. He dropped 26 in the last game. The matchup for him is positive. He's averaging 22.8 across the last three in 24 minutes. He's not a horrible guy to look at if Whiteside is out. Overall in this game, there's not massive amounts of great value. I don't mind Goran Dragic at 5,500. The matchup suits him a little bit. He's been relatively slow this season. But at 5,500, there's a chance he gets 27 points. And I think that this is a nice spot to use him. Luol Deng at 4,600. I reckon, look, as bad as Luol Deng can be, he's been relatively solid. He's more of a cash than a tournament option, and probably not the strongest cash game play, but not someone to completely scratch off. And Kent Bazemore at 5,100, not getting it done at the moment. Don't love his spot here. Millsap at 8,400. Normally going up against the Heat is not a great recipe for big men, but if Whiteside isn't playing, then Millsap definitely has a little bit more appeal, but 8,400 is probably a little bit expensive. And Al Horford at 7,500. I would rather have Al Horford at 75 than Millsap at 84. Dwayne Wade on fire, 7,800 for him. He's averaging over 47 points in the last three games. He is a really nice, expensive shooting guard. I would rather have him than spend the 9,000 on Jimmy Butler. And Chris Bosh at 7,700 also gets a pretty tasty matchup against the Hawks, especially if Millsap happens to be out. Bosh feels like 35 points every single night is what you're going to get out of him. And at 7,700, that's almost exactly what you need. Jeff Teague's been playing a lot better lately. He's at 5,600. He's still only giving you 27 points a night, which is basically right on 5x value. And there is a risk going up against the Heat with their defense limiting point guard, so I'd probably steer clear of him. Obviously, we're steering clear of Dennis Schroeder. I don't know if I call him Denise then. Steering clear of Dennis Schroeder, who is not putting up very much at the moment, very much in a backup role. Stoudemire is the only other one who I'd pay any real attention to, I think, in this one as a cheap option. The Celtics and the Magic. The Celtics are favored by 4.5. The total is 204.5. This has got blowout potential. And when blowouts happen against the Magic, everyone loses 5 or 6 minutes, or all the main players lose 5 or 6 minutes. So pay attention to that. Aaron Gordon's at 4,500. Even if he loses 4 or 5 minutes off 30 minutes and he plays 26, I think that he's got enough to cover 4,500's worth of value. He's averaging 24 in the last three games in 29 minutes. which is not great at 4,500, but it's okay. I think that you can expect 24 to 26 out of him pretty comfortably, and that's nice value for cash and for tournaments. Nick Vucevic at 7,700, well, he's either going to get 29 minutes or he's going to get 35 minutes. If he gets 35 minutes, then 40 points is definitely where you're looking at with him. If the game is out of hand early, it's 30 points for him, and that's really not bad. His lowest score of his last five is 29.6, and that came in 30 minutes, so that's not terrible, and the Celtics do present a nice matchup for big men. Toby Harris at 5,700 has not been able to get it done at all lately. Probably steer clear of him. Vic Oladipo, 5,900. The salary's come down, but the matchup is horrific going up against Avery Bradley. He's only averaging 21.8 in the last three games, so I'll steer clear of him. And I'd also forget about Lord Alfred Payton. He's at 5,800, but then he gets the Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, terrier defense, and it's just not going to work out all that well, I wouldn't have thought. Big men for the Celtics, really nice matchup. Amir Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, Jared Sullinger, all of them have put up decent games recently. Johnson's averaging 24, Olynyk 26, Sullinger 23 in their last three games. Johnson at 5,200, Olynyk at 51, Sullinger at 57. If I'm putting them in order of preference, it's probably Olynyk, Johnson, Sullinger, mainly salary-based. But I'm not really relying upon any of them in cash games. Over their last five, Olynyk's had a 6-point game. Johnson's had an 8-point game. Sullinger's had a 15-point game. Their floors are very low due to the way Stevens runs his team. Tournaments, fine. A guy who is worth looking at is Evan Turner. He's at 5,300. He's averaging 30 across the last three. He's got a pretty decent floor. I don't mind using him. I think he's a nice, solid cash game whose ownership won't be very high. And Marcus Smart's playing some pretty good basketball at the moment. He's at 5,500. Definitely okay with using him in both cash and in tournaments. Probably a little bit risky in cash, but not too bad. Avery Bradley is at 5,600. He had a real stinker in the last game, but I expect him to bounce back, and he's not a terrible guy to have a look at. Isaiah Thomas is at 7,800. His numbers have just not been up to scratch lately. I'd probably steer clear of him. And Lord Alfred Payton's a pretty good defender, so I think we leave him out of it. 3,600 for Shabazz Napier. If it wasn't the Celtics, I'd say throw him into a tournament because he's getting inexplicable minutes in that I can't understand why he's getting them, but he is getting them. And he put up 20 in the last game. And that might be in a tournament worthwhile, but not against the Celtics. The only thing I can think of is that the Celtics shut them down so much that he's forced into 20 minutes, and then he puts up 20 points. So he's a name that I would consider. In the end, I probably wouldn't use him, but it's not a complete write-off to go and have a look at him. The Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are favored by 11 points. The total is 201.5 for this one. Devin Harris is questionable, so that bumps up JJ Barea, and it bumps up Ray Felton if Harris happens to be out. Barea's been putting up some pretty nice numbers lately, averaging over 25 in his last three games. He's at 4,000, and this is a very, very good matchup for Barea, so I'm okay with actually using him. Yes, there's a bit of risk associated with it, but he's been putting up really consistent numbers lately. Wes Matthews at 4,700, been terrible. Great Phoenix matchup here, though. He's worth throwing into a tournament. At 4,700, can he get you 25 points? Yeah, I've got pretty good confidence he can do that. And Darren Williams at 55 has also been playing fairly poorly lately, but there's nothing like playing the Suns to get your numbers back up, so he's worth a look. Archie Goodwin's numbers have dropped off considerably the last two. He's priced at 4,800, though, so he's not necessarily a must-own guy, but I think that he definitely has to come into consideration, and you have to look at him going up against Darren Williams. 30 fantasy points is something that is clearly within reach for Archie. Dirk at 6,800, that's not a terrible salary, but it's one of those ones that's priced so that people who recognize the Dirk name will go and use him. His production hasn't been anywhere near where that salary currently is. Chandler Parsons, though, at 6,700, I would much rather have Chandler Parsons is priced $100 less than Dirk, but over the last five games, Parsons is averaging 37 and Dirk is averaging 29. That is a much smarter use of your salary to use Chandler Parsons. Plus, it's going up against the Suns again, who this is just a great matchup for Parsons. I like Zaza at 6,300. Back in business in his first game back from Achilles, putting up 32 points in 32 minutes. You'd have to think that he's a fairly decent chance for another 30 points here. And PJ Tucker at 5,000 has been playing exceedingly well, getting a lot of minutes, 29 average across the last three at 5,000. Nothing really scares me too much about him going up against the Mavericks. Alex Lynn at 4,600 had been well down in the last couple. Hornacek at his best. 4,600 for Len makes him a tournament option. Same with Markieff Morris at 4,600. And I'll say the same for Tyson Chandler at 4,500. None of them are reliable in cash games. What do you do with Jordy McRae? His minimum salary, he put up 20 in his first game. Throw him into a tournament, definitely. 20 points at 3,500 is over 5x value. And, you know, he could do more. He looked really comfortable. Maybe not all that comfortable that I want to use him in a cash game, but at minimum salary for a guy who could get 20 points, it's definitely intriguing. Now, he did get extra minutes in the last game because Devin Booker was limited by foul trouble, but McCrabe did play a lot of point guard as well, so that limited Archie Goodwin also. So he's going to play both guard positions. Now, Booker at 5,000, even in a limited role, he still put up 25 in the last game. He feels like a very nice cash game play in this one. TJ Warren, I'll leave out of it, and Mirza Tolidovic and John Lua, their roles are too insecure for me to have too much impact. Or for them to have too much impact on any of my lineup construction. The Warriors and the Knicks. The Warriors are favored by 10. The total is 216.5 points. Festus Ezeli is doubtful with that knee problem. And Jose Calderon is questionable with the groin issue from the Knicks. If Calderon is out, we're looking at smashing Langston Galloway. He's putting up over 30 in his last three games. He's at 4,500. Yes, the matchup is not ideal, but I still think that sort of salary, you have to go and use him. Harrison Barnes at 4,500. Maybe. He had a decent game against the Sixers, but not enough that gets me too excited about using him. Steph Curry's at 11,100. That's a lot. It's a lot of money. He needs to go for 50 points. Now, against Jose Calderon, against Langston Galloway, yes, it's possible. But they could also... I don't know. I'm not keen on spending $11,000 on Steph Curry here. I'll leave it at that. Klay Thompson at $7,000, much more confident with using him. He's averaging 35 across the last three. Really solid numbers. Definitely fine with using him. On the Knicks side of things, Robin Lopez at $4,900. The salary's come right down. So have his minutes. This matchup is a positive matchup for centers. So Robin Lopez, I think, will be under-owned, and he's worth a punt in a tournament, definitely. He has been a little bit underwhelming lately, only averaging 26 in the last three games. Really like the matchup for him here. 6,800. I'm okay with using Kristaps in quite a few different tournaments, cash and tournament options. He is worth a look. And Mallow at 9,000, I think, is one of the better high-priced options that is on the board for Sunday. He dropped a 49 in his first game back from that knee problem. The Warriors, for as good a team as they are and as good defensively as they are a positive team in terms of ease against small forwards and against big men in general. So Mallow is someone that you can consider at 9,000. He can go for 40-plus, and it wouldn't feel like too much of a surprise even against this team. Derek Williams, with all these guys back, is probably out of consideration. And 8,800 for Draymond Green feels too high for me. It's still, he needs to go 45, basically for 43, 44 points to get 5x value. And it's just, he's just not doing that at the moment, only averaging 33 across his last five. 4,300 for Andrew Bogut is not a bad one. He put up 37 today against the Sixers, but I'd probably steer clear of him on a back-to-back. Andre Iguodala will be back, but doesn't mean we need to go and use him. And yeah, not much else that really stands out, I think, in this one. The Minnesota Timberwolves. Actually, just a quick mention on the Knicks. Someone tweeted at me that when I was talking about Kylo Quinn, that it sounded like I was saying that I love cock when I was saying that. And just so that was deliberate. That whole spiel on Kylo Quinn was every single word that I used in that was deliberately used to hopefully inject some humor into the show. So it wasn't me being oblivious to what I was saying regarding the shortening of Kylo Quinn's name. So just throwing that out there in case anyone else had any queries and thought that I was making a fool of myself. I probably was making a fool of myself, but it was a deliberate fool. Anyway, the next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Portland Trailblazers. The Blazers are favored by 7. The total is 208. Kevin Martin and Kevin Garnett are both doubtful. So Zach LaVine at 4,600, he's getting a ton of minutes. He's averaging 33 across the last three games. You have to keep riding him while they keep giving him minutes and while Sam Mitchell keeps doing the right thing. 4,600 is a very, very nice salary. So I'm definitely looking at him there. And Gorgui Dieng at 5,400, got to keep using him as well. He put up 45 in the last game. He's averaging 35 across the last three. At 5,400, he feels like a relative no-brainer to use as well. Andrew Wiggins, legitimately terrible in the last game, 9 fantasy points only. He is just not someone that I want to use in DFS very often, if ever. Steer clear of him. Alan Crabb at 4,400 has a little bit of interest to me. He's playing some pretty decent minutes, averaging 29 across the last three, and it's only giving him 19 fantasy points. But at 4,400, if he can get hot, he's yeah, he's not a bad guy to have a look at in a tournament. Love Damian Lillard here at 8,800. This has got 40 points written all over it. His last three games have basically had 40 points written all over it as well. He does have, you know, fluctuations in his performance. And when you think it's a good game from Lillard, he goes out and puts up 25. So it makes me lean more towards him in cash. No, sorry, try again. It makes me lean more towards him in GPPs, but I'm still not completely steering clear of him in cash games. CJ McCollum at 7,500. Yeah, nice matchup, but he's just that $7,500 salary just feels too high for me, so probably someone I steer clear of. Rick Rubio, 6,500, not getting it done at the moment. The matchup's not bad for him, but still really don't see too much happening. And Karl Anthony Towns is now at 8,400, and it's obviously a huge salary. He is averaging 47 points across his last five, so he's actually exceeding 8,400's worth of salary. He is dominant. 8,400, it's expensive, but don't shy away from using it. He could easily, his lowest score in his last five is 31, which, you know, it's not making value at 84, but it's still pretty bloody good. The big men in Portland, Mason Plumlee's the guy to use at 5,900, but the Timberwolves do shut down big men relatively well. I don't have much concern with using him, but the 5,900 salary is pretty high, so that'll probably, you know, make me stay off him. I don't want to use Myers Leonard, and Al-Farouq Amin is at 51, and he had a big game in the last one, but it just hasn't been anything big happening for him recently either. Gerald Henderson at 3,700, he's worth a throw in a tournament. He's been getting some extra run, over 20 minutes a game. Apparently, he's being showcased for a trade. You know how much I love that, so thanks, Terry Stotts, for adding to my frustration. But Henderson is a guy that you look at in a tournament because the minutes have been there, 22 minutes a game, and at 3,700, if he can give you a fantasy point per minute, bang, you've exceeded the value that you need. The last game of the night, the Charlotte Hornets and the Los Angeles Lakers. Nick Batum has been ruled out of this one with that troublesome toe. There's a lot of other injuries to have a look at. PJ Hairston, probable with an elbow. Brian Roberts, probable with a hand issue. Jeremy Lamb, questionable with a toe. Jeremy Lin, questionable with an ankle. Cody Zeller, unlikely to play with his shoulder. And then on the Lakers side of things, we've got Kobe Bryant, who's questionable with a shoulder, and it is a home game, so maybe we don't see Kobe play here. And we've got Lou Williams, who's probable with an illness. So lots and lots to have a look at. 4,000 for Spencer Hawes. Didn't play that well in the last game. Was usurped by Tyler Hansbrough. I don't imagine that happens again in this one. At 4,000 against the Lakers, Spencer Hawes feels like a really nice, cheap center option. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist played one game, 34 minutes, put up 21 fantasy points. Now, he's priced at 5,500, which seems pretty high, but this matchup couldn't be any easier in terms of going up against the Lakers. At 5,500, you need him to go for 25 points. I think that he's got the ability to go for, we've got him projected at 27 on Basketball Monster. He's got the ability to go for 25 points. He's not a horrible guy to use, but that salary does feel a little high. Julius Randle at 6,000. He's been really putting up numbers. He's a really good points league player, which is exactly what DFS is. At 6,000, definitely okay with throwing him out there. D'Angelo Russell at 48, strictly a tournament only option. Can't even get to over 16 points a game in his last three. Really limited by his own play and by the coaching of Byron Scott. Jeremy Lin at 5,100. If he's able to play and there's no restrictions, love this matchup. It's a revenge game situation. He has been putting up big numbers anyway. There's no big Nick Batum. Love Jeremy Lin if he can get onto the court. Lou Williams at 5,800. That just feels a little bit high, that salary. So I'll probably steer clear of him. And 5,700 for Jordan Clarkson. Not a bad cash game play, but not the best either. Kemba Walker at 8,600. It's expensive. He could easily tear the Lakers a new one pretty easily, though. So if you're looking to spend some money, he's there, but I would rather spend $200 more and put Damian Lillard in. That's how I would roll. 5,400 for Marvin Williams. Been playing really well lately, averaging 28 across his last five. He's fine to deploy, especially with all these injuries happening in the front court. And that's probably it. I don't think there's much more to talk about in this game. Brandon Bass, maybe, if you want to use him. Probably shouldn't. That's about it. All right. Let's look at the DFS picks for the day. At point guard, Archie Goodwin, 4,800. There's a little bit of concern there with him, though, with Jordan McRae. Darren Williams at 55 and Dame Lillard at 8,800. At shooting guard, Zach LaVine, 46. Devin Booker, 5,000. Dwayne Wade, 78. Small forwards, PJ Tucker, 5,000. Chandler Parsons, 67. And Carmelo Anthony, 9,000. Power forwards, Aaron Gordon, 4,500. Julius Randle, 6,000. And Chris Bosh, 7,700. And the centers, Spencer Hawes, 4,000, Zaza Pachulia, 6,300, and Nick Vucevic, 7,700. we are done for today, guys. Remember, thank you to everyone who entered the contest for the NBA jersey. Really was astounded by the amount of entries. And Ron120932, please get in contact with me and we can work out your how we get you your prize. The amount that came in, seriously, 75 plus over the last 2 days, has put us within reach of reaching 500 reviews very shortly, so I am extending the contest. If you are review number 500, you will receive an NBA jersey as well, so keep those reviews coming in, and look, even in tomorrow's show, that's how many came through yesterday, in tomorrow's show we might even have the 500th review winner to announce as well, so keep the reviews coming, it's tremendous for me, it'll give you a chance at an NBA jersey, and I do thank you very much. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall, BasketballMonster at BaskMonster, and of course the website is BasketballMonster.com where there's stacks of stuff for you to use for your daily and seasonal fantasy leagues. Of course, there's always Hardwood Paroxysm. You can find this podcast on hardwoodparoxysm.com, plus brilliant writing that occurs over there all the time. We are done for today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Oops. That's better. See ya.